Kevin Larson here. Thank you, everybody, for taking the time to be with us today. And welcome to the inaugural episode of the New Earth Podcast. Very excited to have you with us today. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us. This is going to be a lot of fun. We have been thinking to ourselves for a long time, what are we going to do that is a little more engaging, that can capture people's interest, and that you can really sit in your home and connect to? And how can we make something that will be of use to you in trying to build your business? We want to provide value at every possible turn. And so we have turned to podcasting. We are going to be producing these podcasts every other week. So we're going to have about two of these per month. They're going to be a lot more in depth, and we're going to get a lot more information than we do out of like maybe a standard boot camp, whatever. And every single one of them is going to have a very interesting interview. So you're going to definitely want to pay attention. Tell your friends, tell your family, everybody you know to come and listen to these podcasts, because they are definitely going to be valuable and have information that can help you, not just in everyday life, but I also think in building your New Earth business. So getting started today, I've really been focused on motivation. What is it that gets a person up out of bed to do the things that they want to do, right? With a job, we know what that looks like. With a job, somebody is required to be out of bed, up bright and early, and heading off to do a specific task that they are getting paid to do. So it's almost a different type of motivation. It's an extrinsic motivation. But what about those crazy people? What about those entrepreneurs out there who wake up every day, in fact, and often spring out of bed, excitedly going about their business and really running out of hours before they're done? You know, what is that? What is that motivation? What does that intrinsic motivation look like? Where does it come from? How does that happen? And what will it take for us to foster that type of development and growth inside of ourselves? I think we all know that if we can achieve that in our life, then we are truly wealthy. We are truly rich because we are living a life on our terms and not living a life that has been prescribed for us. And I suppose if New Earth is about anything, it's about that. It's about freedom. The freedom to do what you want, when you want, how you want, with who you want. That's a powerful concept. So we're going to explore that a little bit today. And I've invited somebody to be on this very first podcast with me that I think you will appreciate. And it only makes sense to have the CEO, Bilal Rubnuddin, join us for the very first podcast. Bilal, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor and privilege to be in your inaugural bi-weekly podcast. It's really exciting times ahead for New Earth.
Yeah, we need to come up with a name for this
thing. Yeah, we do. I was just thinking about that when I was talking about it. What's it called?
Yeah, I don't know, but we're going to come up with a great name, and perhaps our folks out there can help us come up with that name.
I think that's a great contest, if I hear.
Yeah. Maybe there will be some free stuff involved, I suppose.
Well, why is it every time I see you, Kevin, there's always some free stuff involved?
I'm always trying to give something away, right?
That's great, though. That's great.
Good. Well, I'm looking forward to that. I want to talk to you a little bit about New Earth. So many of us have heard your family story, and we know that you come from a long line of entrepreneurs, and it really is kind of embedded into your nature. So tell me, before we get into New Earth itself, why is that?
Well, I think the entrepreneurship model, or the essence of what entrepreneurship is taking control of your own destiny by combining what your interests are, what your passion is, what your resources available are, what your knowledge is, what your skill set is, to do something great in this world. And whatever that means to you, to be of an agent for change, to be an empowering force, to be an enriching force. And that's something is that we saw growing up in our family. We saw it with our parents, even though some of them had really professional careers, you know, in whatever world you would talk about. But it was specific that we saw this desire that we are responsible and we are accountable for the reality that we have within ourselves. Yes, there are factors that are beyond our control, but there are many things that are in our control, and an entrepreneur focuses on the things that they can control rather than not control. And to us, that is the essence of freedom, if you will, to be able to do what you want to do. And what a better environment to do that than here. And, you know, we're very fortunate to be here in the United States of America, which empowers and allows that sort of entrepreneurship to exist.
It reminds me of a time when back near the turn of the century, the turn of the 1900s, right, in the United States, that was very common. And around the world, it's actually still a little more common than it is here. For some reason, right around 1900, 1920, everybody stopped having their own family businesses and started working for someone else. And your family, there's also your uncle immigrated.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
So do you think that maybe that's something from, you know, an external culture that you brought with you and your family?
I think that's part of it. You know, we've been fortunate that we have not been institutionalized, if you will, by the environment of maintaining status quo.
And that's what it feels like. That's a great phraseology, right? Institutionalized.
Yeah.
Because when you work for someone else and you hate it,
yeah,
you really want to be institutionalized.
Sounds about right. It's so the thing is, I think the biggest, we've been comfortable. We grow in our lives where we're comfortable, and that's okay. It's good to be comfortable, but being comfortable never changes or creates an impact into being an outlier to be able to change things, to be an agent for change in the positive or even in the negative for that matter. The reality is that I think when you see an environment and when we were, you know, I was raised very comfortably, thankfully, and very gracious for that. But when you are in an environment that you see a lot of people struggle and you see the realities of life for some people, it just wills you to face your fears. And I think that's the biggest thing is because we're in a comfort zone, a lot of us that grew up here in a status quo environment, we've lost that urgency or we don't want to tackle that fear of risking it a little bit, or maybe even risking it all, because that's what you have to do when you're an entrepreneur. And I think that mentality is definitely more prevalent in an immigrant environment, just because you are risking a lot of things to come.
Well,
to
you risk the fact just traveling
exactly.
to get here, right?
Traveling to get here to, you know, leave your family behind in a lot of cases, leave the culture behind to be seen as an outsider, to be seen as an outcast in some instances, but definitely still have that will to, you know, roll up your sleeves and do the hard work and achieve something great for yourself and your future generations.
I find that fascinating because it's reminiscent of a time when this country really came out of the dust. I mean, this is an immigrant country,
mm-hmm.
always has been.
Yes.
And the way we have climbed to the top, I suppose, of that ladder is exactly what you described. Exactly what you described. It wasn't because it was handed to us. We weren't hired to come to the United States, right? People came to pursue happiness. Not a guarantee, not a certificate of happiness, but to pursue it.
I think it was you know, growing up, and I came here when I was a young kid, but you were always thought that this was a place, the land of opportunity, because that's exactly what it was. And that's what that means. It is a land of opportunity, but it involves you taking the effort, you making the decision, you working hard to reap the benefits of that opportunity, if you will. So I think that's that mindset that you've seen the differences in worldviews. You've seen the different struggles that people have to work with, And I think that's really what empowers, you know, that oomph in you, if you will.
That drive
in you to be able to get up and, you know, make a difference in the world. And I think that's what's really exciting is if you're lucky and blessed enough to do that with something that you're passionate about, then it's just so rewarding. It's not even, words cannot describe it.
Well, it's transformative, right?
It is.
You go
it
from
is.
Being a taker or a user to a provider or a giver.
Exactly.
Well, so I'm going to turn 90 degrees on you here then, because this kind of leads into what we are doing at New Earth, right? You can see the obvious connections, but I got to ask, you know, why health and wellness? Why did you get into the health and wellness industry anyway?
Well, what more specifically involved on an individualistic basis than each individual's health and their well-being? And that's a basic necessity of anything that you do. And we are, you know, we're entrepreneurs and we like to think that we're decent business people. So you look at the opportunities of which has the widest mass appeal, and it is health and wellness, because that's something that affects every single person on the planet, whether they want to admit it or not.
Every single day.
Every single day.
Yeah.
So what better industry to be involved in that's something that has a personal individualistic effect, while, you know, all the matrix shows that it's a growing industry. People are more aware of it than they have been, because we've been kind of stuck in this shadow for a while, and we're coming out of it to realize that our health and our well-being do matter, because those are the core, in my opinion, they're the core facets of life. If you have good health and you have good wellness and good well-being, then you are rich, as you mentioned.
Yeah,
you are
yeah.
really rich.
Now, you mentioned the shadow. I know, because we've talked about all this and we've had these conversations in the past. A lot of the time what we're talking about, that shadow of health and wellness that people tend to live in, is this culture of heat it up in 30 seconds, comes in a box, comes pre-prepared. What do you see as far as the economy is concerned? What kind of role does health and wellness play in the overall economy?
Definitely. I mean, if we're not physically healthy and physically and mentally healthy, we can't be productive members of society no matter what we do. So if we want to increase our productivity, we have to have a better intake on our own health and wellness meter, if you will. In addition, what's really important is, you talked about, you know, the shortcut culture is what I call it. You know,
sure.
you take everything, you try to make yourself so busy that you need to take all these shortcuts. But what we've realized, and this is a great analogy for business as well, shortcuts have very short-term gain and very bad prognosis in the long term. And we've seen that. Our health is deteriorating. There's more difficulties and challenges that individuals are facing worldwide because of the health choices that they're making. There's less overall happiness or perceived happiness in the world because of the general well-being of the population. There's more stress, there's more anger, more hate, more violence in the world that we live in today. And I think that's all connected to in each individual's health and wellness. So you want to affect global macro changes, you take it down to an individual level and deal with their health, well-being, and their mental state.
That's fascinating. I really like that, because
yeah.
when you think about it, if you want a peaceful world, how much more peaceful could we be if everyone was well-fed and everybody was healthy?
Exactly.
It's pretty astounding. Yeah.
It is. It's pretty powerful.
So now, New Earth is a combination of things. It's not just health and wellness, of course, but it's also entrepreneurship.
Definitely.
And we've said in the past that we have our products, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the business opportunity is in itself a product.
Definitely.
And so it's almost like we sell entrepreneurship. You can buy an entrepreneurship module from New Earth. Why so focused on that model for people? We talked about, you know, diet and how you can affect somebody. What does entrepreneurship do?
Well, it's the same. You just mentioned about it, right? You talked about what if people were well-fed and happy, how much peace we would have in the world. But what if people were well-fed and happy and on a mission that created an impact in this world. And that's what, to me, the essence of entrepreneurship is. It's a mission to empower and enrich people's lives beyond just your own, but still affecting on the individual level, one person at a time. And what we love to do in New Earth, and what New Earth is in its essence, it's a platform to allow people to explore and learn and educate themselves on the skill set that what it entails in taking some risks to be independent and to take control of your own destiny, so to speak.
There's almost a relationship between how we eat and how we might build a business.
Of course.
It's interesting, right? Because,
you know,
if you're going to eat garbage food as a shortcut, you're going to be unhealthy. And if you're going to try garbage, just treat people like their money schemes as a business, then that's a shortcut as well. And that leads to poor health for your business.
Exactly.
Right?
I think you hit the nail on the head there. That's a great analogy.
Interesting. So the other thing that I think I've heard you talk about this, and I think it's fascinating, is another reason you're focused on entrepreneurship is the future of the economy and the landscape that technology has started to create. Technology is, very simply, it's taking away jobs.
Yes, it is. It's changing the world that we live in, right? So what you might have seen as a specific role for you to play in your job environment, quote unquote, is no longer there because that job can be taken over by an improved technology or an improved system or an improved way of doing things. You're seeing that everywhere. Look at fast food. People are having self-service cashiers in restaurants where you can just go in on a computer, order what you want. Something as basic as a front order taker on a customer service at a fast food restaurant is also evolving out because that's the demands of the change that's going.
And it's cheaper for the entrepreneur that owns that store.
It's cheaper for the entrepreneur. And of course, the entrepreneur is going to look at all ways to increase the value of their business. But I think it's also a reality of the changing of times. And that's one of the things that we have to be part of is changing times. But the thing that's interesting about an entrepreneur is, if I may divert, and this might be a little off topic, if you will, but this is what I really believe in. If we look at if we think of a job as our goal, I want to be a certain profession. I want to be this specific deal in that thing. Then we're just looking ourselves as a cog in a big wheel. And that cog can be replaced. It can change. The technology changes. There's no longer a cog needed. So
if you're treated like a cog, it's because you asked to
you
be
asked,
a cog.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to allude to, is that you're so focused. And what happens when that is taken away from you, which I foresee happening more and more, you don't have the skill sets or personal interactions to be able to adapt, to be able to evolve, to be able to take some risks, learn some new tricks,
because you define yourself as a cog. That's,
exactly.
That's interesting.
So
I
think that's what entrepreneurship allows you to do. And that's what I think New Earth, why we focus so much on entrepreneurship, is we're training you as an individual. If you want, this is, again, it's you have to commit to it as well. If you commit to using New Earth as a platform, you're going to learn skills that are soft skills, that are entrepreneurial skills, that allows you to shift yourself and worth and adapt to the changing environment that you are in. Allows you to use technology for the benefit that is, allows you to learn. And then it goes back, because we're entrepreneurship in the health and wellness model, we're all going to be worried about our health and wellness. We all are, if we aren't already thinking about it.
Right.
So that's something that we foresee will always stay true as long as there's humans living on Earth.
I love that. I absolutely love that, you know, and it's partially why I think I answer this question the way I do. People ask me, you know, so what is New Earth? And I like to respond that it is a human potential network.
Well, that's a great way.
Because at the end of the day, I mean, that's exactly what you just described.
Yeah.
We want to help you with your health, a basal need. We want to help you with entrepreneurship, which, even though you might not know it, is a basal need.
I think so, yes.
That's fascinating. That's great stuff. So I want to talk to you a little bit about something you say at almost every event we go to. And I love it. And I think the people love it. I think that's why there's so much trust in New Earth. And we hear often that we are one of the companies that are doing it right. And it's simply because of this one word, legacy. Yes. What do you mean by legacy?
Legacy is simply, to me, is our impact in the world that we create and also our impact that we leave for our future generations. So basically what I'm trying to say is we are looking at creating entrepreneurs that are focused on health and wellness and financial freedom and independence and to take control of their own destiny. But it's not a short-term thing. We realize that this is something that we want to be retraining generations. And we want to be a legacy of, as a beacon, if you will, of this transformation change that's happening or that will happen in our environment and in the workplace that we are. And we want to be leaders for it. We want to be the yardstick of what this legacy is about.
All right. So I'm going to stop you right there because I think this is fascinating. If I hear what you just said correctly, this is great. And I want people to maybe really pay attention to this part. It is not enough to simply find freedom for yourself, find health and wellness for yourself, but we should share that with other people and help them develop health and wellness and freedom.
Definitely.
Financially. But you're also talking about a pay it forward model that is referring to people who don't even exist yet.
Definitely.
They're not even born. Don't bring them into this economy and train them up through their life believing that they have to do this cog model and then go through the transformation that you did. Just start them out at the beginning that way. So when you say legacy, you don't mean just legacy for you.
No, it's a legacy for every single person that's involved. And in a way, it's a legacy for our world. I mean, I know this is very grandiose if you think about it, but we truly believe because in the end of the day, we're dealing with people. We're dealing with human potential, as you talked about. And that's forever. And so we're talking about as a legacy for us and our future generations, our progeny, and every single person that's involved with us. That's what's so beautiful about New Earth is it's this partnership model. It's not us and them. It's us together creating this legacy. So each person on this call today or each person that listens to us or each person that interacts with New Earth in any way possible has potentially that education that can empower and enrich their lives and affect their future generations in that place as well.
And if people listening are interested, one of the reasons New Earth has a policy that you can actually will your business, just like you could will a normal, if you owned a tire store, you can will that to your children. Well, at New Earth, you can build an organization and will that to your children as well.
Definitely.
Yeah. I love that. That's great. Now, this is probably where the rubber meets the road,
mm-hmm.
right? What is it that keeps people from, I mean, because you said it, this is grandiose stuff. This is amazing. And everybody can viscerally see that, yes, that is something I like. That is something I want. I want to get healthy. I want to feel fantastic. I want to take over the world, right? And I want to share that with other people. I want to create this virtuous cycle where everybody around me is winning and we're all doing well. Doing well while doing good, right?
Exactly.
Well, how is it that some of us can observe that and still stay seated, still not get off of our butt and really chase that down? What is it that stops people from doing that?
Well, I think you mentioned that very clearly is, you know, we sometimes fall in love with ideals, and that's great. We fall in love with ideas. But the one thing that you learn in every single human story that's ever faced in this earth forever has been the ability of someone to take their ideals and their value set and actually translate that into action. It actually takes hard work. It takes grit. It takes determination. It's physical and it's an action. You talked about it. It's perfect. You have to get off your butt. You have to know where you're going. You have to know what you have. And then you actually have to start doing it. And that's the hardest part for people to do. And I believe the biggest reason for that is maybe their passion is not kindled enough. their desire has not been well formed, they are not as determined, or they're afraid, as we talked about.
Yeah,
they're comfortable, you know, in their status quo, so they just are afraid. And fear, as you know, in anything, is the first hurdle that most people will not cross.
Oh, yeah. So, well, hierarchy of needs, right? One of the biggest ones is safety, a feeling of security. People tend to have more fear in their lives than they realize. And, you know, at the same time, like you said, it's not easy. So, you know, I often look to stories in history. One of the reasons I feel like I am able to shrug off fear is because I observe that ability in other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to find it everywhere that I can. Do you have anyone that just jumps out at you? And I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but do you have anyone that jumps out at you that maybe people can relate to and say, you know, wait, I get it. That's motivating for me to get off my can and go build this business.
Definitely. I think there's a lot of, you know, we're very fortunate. We live in an environment there. I think there's a lot of good examples in our history. And it's very important to learn from our history. I think we have to learn. And that's part of their legacy that we're continuing on. And we hope to be part of that process of being continuing our legacy that people will continue on and learn from. You know, you have the famous ones, you know, Andrew Carnegie or Horatio Alger, Henry Ford.
Napoleon Hill. Yeah.
There's so many of them that... You did put me on the spot. You know, this is an interesting one. I don't know if many people think of this. But this
that, because if it's off the beaten path, people can remember it.
Yeah,
so that's good.
It's something that we, you know, in our background are a little more familiar with, is Colonel Sanders.
That is excellent.
the founder, if you will, of KFC, the Kentucky Fried Chicken. And most people don't realize this, but he was a transient in different things, different businesses, different entrepreneurship, different jobs. He worked as a steam engine. He worked in a steam engine. He worked as an insurance salesman.
Really?
He worked for Standard Oil, which is an oil and gas company. So he moved all over the place, but he didn't hit success, if you will, till he was in his 60s. And people don't realize that. And that's something that's pretty, I think, for me, is the basic story. There's a lot of things that you can learn from him.
So wait, the colonel.
Mm-hmm.
The colonel from Colonel Sanders
was
not the colonel until he was in his 60s?
Oh, definitely, yes. He didn't become a colonel till I think early 50s when he had a restaurant in Kentucky where he was selling his famous fried chicken. But he did not achieve success, or the KFC brand was not, actually the name even KFC was not coined by him. It wasn't until the people and he had found the associates that he could partner with and vision together to create the Kentucky Fried Chicken brand.
That is amazing. So he didn't even come up with Kentucky Fried Chicken.
No, he didn't. Can we digress? Can we go into
the
story?
Yes, I want to hear more about this.
All right. So, as I said, he was in various jobs, you know, everything from farming, and he was involved in insurance sales. He even enlisted in the United States Army, and he completed his service commitment there.
Now, was he a colonel?
No, he was not a colonel in the Army.
Okay.
He was not, but he was a military guy. He worked as a blacksmith in the Southern Railway. He worked in the steam engine. He lost his job multiple times. He moved back when he was 30 years old. He moved back to with his mother because he was out of a job and didn't have anything to live on. And his mother, guided him to become an insurance salesman. And he started selling life insurance, et cetera, et cetera. Then finally, he ended up, I don't remember the details specifically, but he ended up working for Standard Oil Company,
mm-hmm.
right? One of the Standard Oil Companies. And, through his charm, through his grit, through his determination, there was a service station in Kentucky. I think it was in I'm trying to think of which the name of the city was. In Corbin. Corbin, that's where Kentucky. Yeah. In Corbin, Kentucky is where he became a gas station supervisor or manager for Standard Oil. And he loved to cook. He had a very passion for cooking. He understood technology and he wanted to make things taste well, but at the same time find the ways to make it more efficient. So he developed, in that process of working in that gas station, he developed his famous recipe for frying chicken. And instead of frying it in a pan, he fried it in a pressure cooker. And that's the difference. And this was, you know, I want to say somewhere in the mid-30s or so. And that's when he started his chicken restaurant as part of a service added value. Because
for the gas station.
For the gas station, because it was, you know, the gas station was in the boonies somewhere.
So he started selling chicken on the side.
Mm-hmm.
His own version of Kentucky, well, not Kentucky
it was,
Fried.
It was just fried chicken.
Fried chicken.
Yeah.
And cooked in his unique way.
Cooked in his unique way with his form.
As an add-on to the gas station.
As an add-on to the gas station, exactly.
So how did it become?
So it became so, it was so, people enjoyed the fact that they could, you know, back then you would have to have, you had gas station attendants that would actually fill you up. And it would take a while. It wouldn't be like a few minutes like it's now, but it would be like 7, 8, 10 minutes to fill up. And people loved it that while they were filling up, they could actually eat a hearty meal and they enjoyed it. They enjoyed the flavor. They thought it was great. So people started flocking to his restaurant thinking, oh, well, you know, there's great food. Like what we do, right?
Right.
Is the social networks of the 50s or the 40s,
sure.
Where word gets around that people that, hey, there's something really good here. There's a good restaurant. You should try it. People would go anyways on this. It was on the main highway or off the main highway. And so that's what he started doing. And he continued modifying and tweaking till he came with his special 7-Eleven herbs and spices. And his popularity grew. And what happened is World War II came about.
Okay.
Right? And World War II came about, and if you remember, there was gas rationing in World War II.
Right.
So that killed the gas station business.
Oh, goodness.
That specific gas station business. So he was, again, out of a job. And he's like, if he was born in 1880, in 1940, when did the U.S. enter the World War II? 1942?
Yeah, so he'd be 62 years old.
He didn't have a gas station. The restaurant closed down because they didn't have gas to sell, and that was the primary driver. And people, you know, were struggling for stuff. So that's when he took his recipe and hit the road, trying to sell teach other restaurateurs how to make his specific brand of fried chicken so he could license it.
He was taking his chicken recipe on the road.
Taking his chicken recipe on the road. Because he, you know, he didn't have a...
So, now, KFC was founded substantially later.
Yeah,
so
about 10 years later.
10 years. So, he was on the road for 10 years with his chicken recipe.
Exactly. He was on the road for 10 years, 8 to 10 years, where that's all he did is he went, traveled all over the world trying to cook restaurants. And people loved the chicken, but as you know, not a lot of people wanted to commit. There was still a lot of fear. There was uncertainty. But he was persistent. And that, to me, is why his story is interesting. Is here's a 60-year-old. And we, unfortunately, in today's way of worldview of thinking, is you stop, quote-unquote, working or achieving your dreams or trying to achieve success once you get to the 60s. That's when you slow down.
You're supposed to slow down and watch the sunsets.
And I think that's okay. You know, that there's an element to that. But the thing that's unique about entrepreneurs is entrepreneurs, I believe, never retire. They transition into doing other things. That's why you see people like Warren Buffett, who still, you know, he just released his shareholder letter recently.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that. And in it, he still talked about he's 90 years old and he's still going strong.
That's crazy.
You know, and
that's
because
awesome.
He's passionate.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is, you know, you're not limited to your worldview on, oh, at this age I have to do this, at this age I have to do this, at this age I have to do this.
Because he's a programmed entrepreneur.
Exactly. So
so when did the Colonel hit it?
So finally, he traveled all the way from Kentucky, went to the South, Alabama, And a few places had gotten some traction and were using his recipe, and he was getting some royalties. But he realized very early on that he could not do it himself. Like, he didn't have the resources, the leverage, he didn't have the technical capabilities, and he didn't have the business savvy of a restaurant. Remember, he worked in the railroads, he worked as an insurance salesman, so he had some sales skills, but he didn't have the entire business skills of establishing a system. So while he was in his travels in the 50s, in 1951, I think, actually, he met a wonderful gentleman in Utah, of all places.
Utah
is pretty far from Kentucky.
It's quite a walk.
It's quite a walk.
Okay.
So in 1950s, he met an individual by the name of Pete Harmon. And Pete Harmon is what I like to call the silent hero of KFC, if you will, or the backbone of KFC. Because, well, first of all, he came up with the name KFC. It was called Harold Sanders Fried Chicken. That's Colonel Harold Sanders Fried Chicken. And then it became Colonel's Chicken because in the 1950s, Colonel Sanders was the governor of Kentucky, gave him the honorary title of a colonel. So he's, again, not a colonel by military rank, but he was an honorary title.
That governor loved chicken.
The governor loved chicken, and so he gave him the honorary title of Colonel Sanders. And in 1952, Sanders franchised the first Kentucky Fried Chicken to Pete Harmon. And he was a restaurant operator. He owned
the
restaurant.
So the first Kentucky Fried Chicken and the name Kentucky Fried Chicken came from Utah,
exactly.
A guy that was not the colonel.
The guy that was not the colonel, Pete Harmon. He's still one of the largest he's passed on now, but his company is still the largest franchisor of Kentucky Fried Chicken in the United States. Franchisee, sorry. This is the thing that's interesting. So he had a restaurant, actually a very big restaurant, and it was one of the more popular restaurants. And he used this Southern food, fried chicken, to distinguish himself. But he's the one that put the systems in place, put the marketing in place, put the tagline in place. And it was such a hit in Utah that he started opening more and more restaurants of these. And that's when he came up with the name. He didn't like, because it was more than just an individual of Colonel Sanders. It was
the South.
The South. So that's when he came up with the name of Kentucky Fried Chicken. And, he's the one that hired a marketing individual to actually come up with the name of Kentucky Fried Chicken. So everything was, and it was a simple royalty agreement. So every chicken piece that was sold, there was a penny or two that was paid to Colonel Sanders. Everything else was done by, so literally the company of Kentucky Fried Chicken was actually owned, if you will, and operated by Pete Harmon. And that's, again, another thing, another lesson, if you can take from it, is it's the people around you. You don't do it alone.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's boil that out. Well, or let's pressure cooker that out, as
exactly.
The Colonel would have us do. And what I see there is a couple of things. The willingness to work.
Yeah.
The desire to be an entrepreneur, to just hit the road at 62 in the 50s, traveling all over the country with a chicken recipe and landing in Utah from Kentucky, of all places. It seems like he had a couple of key things that were the drivers of his success. What would you say those are?
A really corny way of saying it, but I think it's important because that's how we remember is, he had passion, he had persistence, and he had Pete.
Exactly. I like it.
So, because it's you have to have the passion when you face the hurdles that you face in life and the obstacles that are on your path. If you don't have the passion and the drive and your why is not great or powerful enough, then those hurdles will be what they are. They're hurdles. They're going to prevent you from crossing over it.
You've really got to believe in the chicken.
You got to really believe in what you're doing.
Yeah.
And the drive, you got to have that drive that, and think of, again, going back to specific to our industry, specific to our business, how many of us see, Colonel Sanders went through literally 8 to 10 years worth of no's before he got a yes.
Wow.
He might have had a few yeses here, but really got a yes. Really found the partner that would be willing to believe in him and believe in his product to take it to the next level.
You almost have to be blind to the disbelief of others.
Exactly. And that's a great way of putting it.
Really,
you know.
And then you mentioned persistence. So I think the best model of persistence in my life, I have a Jack Russell Terrier.
Yes.
And you've met Penny.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And that dog is persistent. You leave a tray of cookies anywhere, and she will jump for a half an hour, firmly believing the entire time that she will knock that over and get a couple of those cookies.
Definitely.
But it seems to me persistence on his level was dramatically different. And how might that fit with us? You know, let's take this example of the kernel and let's go back to New Earth. What does persistence look like for us today?
Well, we talked about it a little bit. One is, to be willing to take your shots, as we talked about, you know. There will be the naysayers, there will be the negative influences around you, and they're going to be there no matter what you decide to do. Whether you do New Earth or whether you do something else in life, whenever you're trying to come off your shell and you're trying to, remember we talked about the cog? There's a lot of cogs in this world. And
when the cog says, I'm done, no, don't leave us.
Exactly.
We're all cogs.
Well, not that, but it's that fear is like, you know, fear sets in and people
sure.
are not being able to overcome their fears. So I think that persistence to be able to look at his age. I mean, he was born in 1880. KFC was not franchised till 1951 or 52. So simple math, that's almost 70 years old. He was 72 years old when he actually got the KFC, was born.
That's when they took the picture. That's why he's got white hair.
Exactly. That's when he took, exactly. You're right. So he was 72 years old. So think about that persistence that, hey, this was in the 50s when a 70-year-old is a really old 70-year-old. You know,
yeah,
it's not the same
yeah.
as today when we have some healthy 70-year-olds. And he was healthy, but he was determined and he had the drive and he had the persistence to keep on walking into those restaurants no matter how many times they said no or how many no's he got. And I think in our business is the same thing. This is a voluntarily based platform.
Right.
So people choose to partner with us. People choose to partner with the people that are around them. So if someone doesn't choose or is not in the right timing in their life for them to make the transition to be part of the platform of New Earth, that's okay. You have to be willing to go beyond that and not let that noise of negativity crowd your thoughts.
Yeah, it's almost like you can view your dedication and passion by your willingness to take the nose.
Definitely.
Right?
I
if
think
the,
so.
You got to just let it go. Otherwise, well, there's a saying in network marketing, right? Some will, some won't. So what? Who's next?
Exactly.
You know? And I suppose that network marketing doesn't have ownership of that. It's any business. It's any entrepreneur.
Exactly. It's anything. It's anything that in life that you want to do. Just, you know, look at Steve Jobs as an example, as another contemporary, you know, person. How many quote unquote difficulties or stumbles did he have to leave? He was actually let go of the company that he
founded. He was kicked out of his own company. So
you know,
yeah.
that he founded. But it's that reality and that maturity to be able to look at yourself and say, hey, you know, I truly believe I have going to do what I need to do to get to the next level. There might be some shortcomings. There might be some resources that are not available at hand. And that's why I think it's really nice, and that's why I'm really proud of New Earth, is I think we provide that platform, that safety net. Hey, it's not a lot of risk to take in. You have to commit your time. You have to commit yourself. You have to actually do your work, and it's hard and it's not easy, but those are choices that are in your control. We take away some of the other things that you don't have to worry about in terms of making sure you have product that are sell, that are actually good for you, that are world class, having systems that are paying people fairly, that are having systems and tools that you can talk about, having presentation skills and et cetera. So I think it's just important that you have the support team. And I think that's what Pete was for the kernel. If anything, he was the New Earth. If you will.
Sure.
He was the New Earth to what Colonel Sanders might have been to the New Earth products.
right.
if you will. So he was beyond just that individual, here's a great product, but I need that system of how can I market. You know, KFC in the world is one of the most popular franchises in the world.
Yeah, they're all over. I mean,
you know,
I've been to a KFC in China.
Exactly. And regardless of, let's you know, they're not doing a great job in improving people's health, if you will.
Sure, exactly.
And stuff. But we're just taking the business sense from it. It was this system that was in place that adapted the environment that they lived in to be able to grow beyond it. So it's you find the people that are willing to be in your, what I love the term that you coined, your virtuous cycle. Because
yeah.
it's never one person. Yes, it's one person at one time, but it's never one person that changes the world. You read any book, you talk to any successful person, and the truly successful people and those who continue to be successful are the ones that say that, hey, there was a whole team with me that achieved,
sure,
that
sure.
helped me get to this position.
So for the folks listening to this podcast, maybe the question is, you know, who's your Pete?
Exactly.
Go find your Pete and find another one. It turns out that I think there are a lot of Petes out there.
I think so.
There really are. And you've got, you know, one group that has the emotion, the passion, the drive, the persistence, and the entrepreneurial spirit. And then you've got another one that is logical and focused and dedicated to the system and knows how to build. And when you put these disparate abilities together as a team, magical things happen, right? You become, you go from, you know, a 60 something that finally got their chicken recipe adopted by somebody to a 70 something multimillionaire, right? So we don't make income claims like that, but we do simply say that, with a team of the right people, you can do some amazing things.
And that's also not the driver. The money is in the end not the result of the value of success. It's whatever you want it to be, whatever you define that. It's just a good way to keep score. You know, it's a good way to shoot for a goal. But the reality is, you know, going back to my personal life, if it wasn't for the Colonel, we wouldn't be here in New York today.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. And that's the legacy, is if it wasn't for a 67-year-old man being as persistent as he was, we wouldn't have found the platform that taught us the skill sets of entrepreneurship that were important that we could have built and imparted into New York.
Well, I know your family, and I know you'd have found another way.
Yeah.
This just happens to be the path that you selected.
And that's the path that we selected and the path that we work. You know, you work with things that are within your control.
Sure.
And things that are not, you don't worry
about.
Yeah,
you paddle where you are. Mm-hmm. You know, I heard a phrase the other day that I'm going to repeat for you guys that I think is useful, those of you listening to this podcast. Might take you a second, but write this down. It is that money is the thunder to lightning's value. Let me say that again. Money is the thunder to lightning's value. What always comes after lightning? Thunder, right? Well, what always comes after value? Money.
Definitely.
And that typifies exactly what we believe the power of the New Earth platform provides. Thank you so much, Bilal, for being on this initial podcast, of which we have yet to name.
The podcast that shall be named.
And I'm really grateful to all of you that took the time to listen. And hopefully this has been of value. If there are topics or things that you would like us to discuss, please let us know. Send us an email to New Earth Customer Service at newearth.com or Customer Support at newearth.com. And we are really, really grateful for everything that you do to build this company, to build this brand. You are our Pete Harmon. You are the one that is going out there and building, providing value, helping people that are in your path. And we're grateful every day that you do it. We will continue to try and make New Earth the best possible platform it can be for your success. Thank you again. I appreciate your time, and we will talk again soon.